Hi, I'm Ebony, and welcome to Motivation to Write, a podcast where I talk to the experts ranging from writers to marketers to motivational speakers to psychologists who offer their advice and knowledge to help us as writers step into our full potential and become the best version of ourselves. Today, I have the honor of interviewing Kylie LaBelle. She's a journalist. She's a content marketer. She's a publicist. She's a copywriter. She's everything rolled into one. And she has some great advice on content marketing and how to pitch your story to a publication. But before we get to her, I have a few announcements. My virtual cocktail party for Women Who Write is taking place October 23rd. By the time this episode airs, the RSVPs, I don't know why the lighting always changes like that. Anyways, but the RSVPs will have closed, but don't worry because this is a monthly event, so you can participate next month. The event is limited to 8 participants so that everyone gets a chance to share. It's a place where we can offer encouragement and ideas and inspiration to each other as writers and bloggers. It's a place where we talk about marketing, we talk about self-care, we talk about maintaining our confidence. It's just a great space to network with other bloggers. So keep an eye out for November's virtual cocktail party for Women Who Write. Also, November 8th through the 15th will be my first 7-day affirmation challenge. This is going to be a program designed to help us change our minds. And when I say change our minds, transform our thoughts so that we can then transform our lives. Let's turn the way we think about things around, give it a more positive spin. So look out for that. November 8th through the 15th, and I will have more detailed information as we get closer to that date. Now let's meet the wonderful Kylie LaBelle. Kylie Aura LaBelle is a copywriter, editor, marketer, and publicist with more than a decade of experience. She's worked with Fortune 500 companies, celebrities, podcasts, and world-renowned publications, and has managed large writing teams, been responsible for multi-thousand dollar budget projects, and garnered press for clients in international publications. Kylie earned her degree in journalism from the State University of New York at Purchase College. She lives in Los Angeles, is married to comedian Daniel LaBelle, and is the proud mama of 2 dogs, 5 chickens, and a tortoise.
Hi, Kylie. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm so excited that you're here. This morning I was going through your website. You were published by some pretty big periodicals and magazines, like the LA Times, the Washington Post, the New York Magazine. That's incredible. Gosh.
Yeah.
So how did you get started with writing?
So yeah, I got started, I'd always written since I was a little kid. You know, I wrote little songs, like I really wanted to be Britney Spears, so I'd write pop songs and things like that. And then I was like the editor-in-chief of every school paper, of every school I went to. And then, you know, I did that in college. And then after college, I got a full-time job in TV at the Biography Channel. That's what I thought I wanted to do. I thought I wanted to be a TV producer. And it turned out I absolutely hated it. And I decided to quit my job and become a...
Is the biology? Is the
Biography Channel still...
Because I used to love that channel. They had some great, when they had the biography series, when they would feature like a celebrity or historical figure, those were great documentaries. I don't know what happened to them.
That was my job. I would like do, but I did like all the B-list people like Pamela Anderson and things like that. So I learned a lot of unnecessary things. I just didn't like it at all. I didn't like TV. It's kind of cutthroat. You have to be very extroverted. That's not me. So I also had interned at The Daily Show when it was Jon Stewart, and that was also very cutthroat. I mean, he was wonderful, but just wasn't the environment for me. So I interned at The Onion, and I loved it, and I realized I need to be around writers. And I started freelancing for my local paper in Brooklyn. And then I wrote, this is part of my story, you know, I was making like $250 a week just doing that. Airbnb just started. I was Airbnb-ing my room out in my apartment in Brooklyn. And so I was just really scraping money together. My husband and I would go on the street, pick up things that people were throwing out, and then resell them on Craigslist.
Wow.
Yeah, it was literally whatever we could think of. So then, yeah, I just kind of built freelancing. And then I realized, you know, journalists just don't make a lot of money. And this world is getting much more expensive, especially for millennials. So I started doing content marketing instead. And so I do a mix of both these days. So yeah, I've gotten into the bigger publications, but typically the bread and butter is through content marketing.
That's actually really, I'm glad that you said that, because I kind of want to talk a little bit about content marketing as well as like personal essays. So since you mentioned content marketing, can you tell us what that is?
Sure. It's basically there's different kinds of marketing. There's outbound marketing, which is advertisements on TV, commercials, magazines, things that basically scream at you and they don't really give you value and there's no relationship marketing with that. And then the other way is inbound marketing, and that would be content marketing. That's creating content for people that's relevant to their lives, that's entertaining, that's funny, interesting, whatever it is. That would be blogs, videos, emails, things like that. And that's how brands are getting people to buy from them today, mainly.
Right, because I think when most people think of content marketing, they think of just writing. What I mean, is it based mostly in the art of writing, or is there more to it?
It's much more to it than that. It's social media posts, it's email newsletters, which is writing mostly. It's pictures on Instagram. It's whatever type content is literally, you know, a Facebook post or an Instagram post or a Twitter post or a huge video, a short film, just whatever, you know, an advertorial in a newspaper. It's kind of blurred the line between advertising and content marketing. But basically it's usually free, I'd say. Like a good example, let's just say GE, they're really known for their content marketing. So they create little videos and then people watch them on YouTube and then they might say, oh, I want to buy GE products or something like that. So that's how that works. Just people use it nowadays because it gives, rather than advertisement, which doesn't give you any value at all, this gives people value. And so they are more connected to brands.
So I'm a beginning blogger, like how could I use content marketing to expand my readership?
Sure. So it depends what your niche is, or niche, I don't know, however you want to say it. So you would just create topics around that niche. And then so what's your blog about? Is it about poetry?
It's about, actually, that's so funny, because when I started, it was about poetry because I didn't know in what direction I wanted to go. But it is about motivating writers to write. And when I say that, it's writers who feel like they don't have anything to write about, or, you know, who would want to read my writing. It's geared toward getting them motivated to actually do something.
Yeah.
To actually write. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you'd want to, you know, turn that into profits, which, you know, that's very feasible. You would just write about topics that they want to hear about. And then the more visitors you get to your blog, the more audience you get, then you can, you know, sell them certain things. If you give away a lot of content for free, people will trust you. They'll subscribe to your email newsletter. And that's basically it. That's how you make money online, which is just building an audience. There's many different ways to do it. You know, you could do affiliate marketing, which is you would sell products related to your topic on your website. You would get a cut of every sale and things like that. Or like I'm trying to do online courses. That's another very popular thing. You could create a podcast and you could get advertisements on it. You could just ask for donations. That's another way. So yeah, it, basically you have to provide a lot of free content though these days to get people interested in you.
And how important is it? I was talking to some fellow bloggers last week, and they're juggling so many different social media accounts and using them to try to promote their blogs. Like they have a Twitter, they have an Instagram, they have a Facebook. Is it good to have a lot of those, or should someone just kind of focus in on one or two?
Yeah, I actually talk about this a lot in my course because, first of all, writers, you know, they're not really visual. So I don't think it's so necessary to have an Instagram or a Pinterest Unless, like, let's say you're writing about body positivity and you want to show pictures of yourself, then that would make sense. But let's say you're just writing about writing, you know, what are you going to post a picture of? A notebook and a pen? And I don't, the number one thing for me is LinkedIn, because it's B2B. It still has a lot of organic reach. Facebook.
I just want to clarify, when you say B2B, you mean business to business for anyone who doesn't.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So if writers want to get writing clients or jobs, LinkedIn is the way to go. And it, as I said, it has organic reach. When you post something, people actually see it. On Facebook, if you post something, Facebook will bury you, even on your personal page. I've noticed that when I post links to outside websites, Facebook hides them. I'll get like one like. So whenever I post a link, I say link in comments below, because Facebook will bury it. They bury YouTube videos, anything that takes you off Facebook. And then for a page post, you don't show up at all in a newsfeed. You have to pay to show up to your followers. And if you're a writer, you really shouldn't be doing that. So, I mean, that's more so for bigger companies, and, you know, you shouldn't have to pay to boost your posts. So LinkedIn is a really great place. Twitter is good for writers. I just think that Twitter is a dumpster fire. And like, it's very divisive place, and it's very unhealthy. If you're sensitive to these things, and, you know, I look on the news topics and like, it gets me angry every time, no matter what. So, I think, yeah, I think it's better to choose one. I would choose LinkedIn above all else. And then, you know, if you can, another great way to get people interested in you is to start a Facebook group. There you will have organic reach for sure. And people want community, especially these days, and you will show up to people. As opposed to a page where you don't. And yeah, people want community. And then one that's not social media that you should really do is an email newsletter, because if people opt in, they want to hear from you. And that's also another little community, and you can offer people a lot of value. You're going directly to them. There's no noise or distractions like there is on social media. So yeah, those are definitely the top three. And if you love social media, great, do it all. But if you're getting bogged down, you know, you don't have to do it all. I think that's, a lot of people make that mistake.
Well, 'cause right now I have a Twitter, and I have a Pinterest, but I don't, and that was another thing that came up in our discussion. Like, we don't really know how to use Pinterest. Like, what, how does that even work? Especially for writers. Do you know how it works?
No.
Okay. when you, it's interesting when you said that the Twitter world is very divisive. I can definitely see that, especially with what's happening in our country. I found the writing community on Twitter to be pretty supportive. So that's what I've been kind of focusing in on, that particular platform, because they are pretty, they're nice people, the writers.
Yeah, that's great. And Facebook groups, definitely. I found a lot of jobs and opportunities in Facebook groups. I made a lot of connections. You just have to find the right one, at ones that aren't being spammed with memes or whatever, or bots, people selling things. But yeah, you can, if you get it in the right group, then it's amazing.
So how important is community and networking in your writing career, or in writing careers in general?
I mean, I think it's very important. The number one way I get clients is through cold email pitches. So I wouldn't say it's the number one way, not for me, but it's definitely number two. Because it matters who you know, they're going to recommend you. Every niche is pretty small when you get down to it, and people talk, and, you know, if you create a good reputation for yourself, then you're going to blossom. And it's very important to pick a niche and find your community within it. And just when I was starting out, I was just like, when I moved to LA, I cold emailed a bunch of writers. I met up with a few different ones. They gave me really good advice. They're like, you should join this group and this group. And it's also very motivating to talk to other writers, especially ones who are further along in their careers. And you can just get so many shortcuts, you know. Right. If you're alone and doing this and trying to start a business, you're just going to be floundering. because when you go to a company, you have coworkers and you have bosses and they can help you. But when you're alone, you know, you have nothing. Maybe you can listen to podcasts or something, but that's not as helpful as one-on-one support and group support. So networking is important in every single profession, but really with writing and small business, if you're going to create your own small business around it, for sure, you need to know people.
Right, right. Because I recently had an event, I called it the virtual cocktail hour, and I wanted just a small group of like writers to come. It was for women who write. And when I put up the ad, my little ad on Twitter, I got one person that signed up. I was really excited because she was already on my email list. So I started just cold emailing like bloggers that I had been following. I would just DM them or email them. And I'd say, hey, you know, I really like your blog. I find it inspiring. I'm on your newsletter list. Are you interested in this? I really love for you to come. Mm-hmm. And it worked.
Yeah.
It worked. Yeah. I was so excited. So it's just that taking that step and reaching out or cold emailing, cold DMing people can really pay off.
Yeah, and writers are really nice, I found. All my years, maybe like 2% of writers have been mean or whatever. And then just the fact that it's women want to help other women. I feel like most writers are women, just from my experience, because it's more, I guess, of a touchy-feely kind of career, and women are more in touch with their emotions, especially with personal essays. You really don't find men writing personal essays or anything like that.
I was just thinking of that today. I was like, yeah, why is it that most of the personal essays published are by women?
Because, you know, men have different ways of dealing with emotions or whatever, trauma or things like that, or they don't deal with it. Or, yeah, women are just more emotional, but not in a bad way or anything. Just, we're more open.
I mean, the irony is, because I'm an English teacher, and so when you're studying English in school, you're usually studying male authors, you know? So, you know, it's always novels written by men, even men poets, mostly in school. But when it comes to, like, the real, like, stuff of a personal essay, they tend to be women, especially in this century and latter part of last century. So speaking of personal essays, I love the personal essay because, I mean, it's personal and people can really relate to your story. And there's something about finding the remarkable within the unremarkable. Like, you're just having a normal day and something which you would think unremarkable happens, but you have some insight and you could share that through the personal essay format. I feel like when a lot of writers say, I just don't know what to write about, and they feel stuck, they don't know what to write, I think it's a good idea just to start with your life. Mm-hmm. Don't you think?
Because
there's so much, and I know you've written quite a few personal essays. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about writing a personal essay? Do you purposefully look for things to write about, or do you, like, just after reflection think, this would make a pretty good story?
The latter. It's never the former. Whenever I try to write about something that happened, it just doesn't happen. It literally just has to come to me. I mean, there's certain things, like if you experience trauma or something, that's definitely going to be like, oh, I have to write about this. But then, like, when I've done that, it doesn't even come out very good. Like, the ideas just have to come to me and they always come when I'm in a calm place, when I am stimulate as in, like, you know, after I travel, I always have a million ideas for writing. But day to day, I've been so uninspired throughout Corona, just because it's trauma all the time with the politics, with just civil unrest, just everything. It's creating, you know, a lot of anxiety. And when I'm in this place, and many others also experience this, it's very hard to tap into that place in yourself where you can reflect and you want to write, because you're kind of just in survival mode at this moment. But in those times that I've been calm, collected, you know, the ideas just flow. So typically I'll just write like 10 essays in a row or something. But another thing that I found through writing groups is you can always start with a writing prompt. You think you have nothing, like, oh, the the man sat under the bridge, and you're like, what am I going to write about that? And then it just kind of comes to you. I had a teacher who timed us, and I would just come up with like these things on the spot, and I had no idea. So you can like look up, there's a bunch of different writing prompts online that you can do.
Right. And you mentioned, there's kind of a few things I want to talk about in what you said, but you mentioned writing groups. So how big of a role have writing groups played in your career?
I join one every few years. I take classes. There was a writing workshops Los Angeles. I was in that for a while. And then just I was in a different one last year. And then I want to do it in person. So I'm going to wait until we can do that again, because I'm not so great with Zoom. I don't know. Just when people get together, it just feels so much more different and so much better. But I think it's definitely important. Again, like, it can help you in your career. It gives you feedback. Writers are very solitary people, so it can give you like networking, friendship, relationships, and you need all those things to thrive. Even though a lot of writers are introverted and think they don't, and they think that texting is okay or Facebook Messenger is okay or WhatsApp, it's not. That's actually a big problem, I think, with today's society, is that we don't really communicate anymore. So writers groups are very important, but you have to find the right one that you click with the people. And yeah, so you can find them online or just look up different classes in your area.
Yeah, I think I know when I was just starting grad school, and one of the first courses I took was a creative nonfiction writing course. And then I saw on the syllabus that we would have workshops, and I think I started sweating so hard, so instantly. Because sometimes it's hard to just put your stuff out there, even if it's just a small group of people. Because I was thinking, oh my gosh, these other writers in this class are probably way better than me. They're going to be reading my stuff. They're going to have all these horrible things to say. I'm just going to feel so embarrassed. But it turned out to be one of the most empowering experiences I've had in my like growth as a writer, because they were very supportive.
Yeah.
And that's where I gained a lot of confidence, was through those workshops.
Yeah.
So I think they're great.
Yeah.
You have to find the right one though.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like therapy when it's done right. Like, a therapist isn't going to tell you what's wrong with you or tell you what to do. They're just going to be supportive. They're going to listen to you. They're going to give you feedback. If you can join a group like that, that's just, you know, they say like, great job. They give you constructive criticism and not telling you what you did wrong or what you need to fix, then that's great. And I'm always surprised there's just so many good writers out there, and they're all in these writing groups.
Right. Yeah. And when you talked about a little earlier, how when you're writing personal essays, usually you don't ever just purposefully look for things to write. It's always like after reflection. I was thinking of the essay that you wrote, Shabbat Saves Me From Myself, where you realized that, you know, you were a workaholic. You didn't know it at the time, but you just were going. You didn't have time for the things that really fulfilled you. And I feel like perhaps that's what maybe keeps a lot of writers from writing also, is because they have so much stuff on their plate, because hardly anyone's just writing completely like that's their career. I mean, especially if you're beginning, you have like multiple things that you're doing. So what would be your advice for someone who really wants to write and feels like they just don't have the time or too much on their plate? How do they even get started?
Yeah, this is such a good question, because everyone, especially if you have kids and you're at home and with Corona and you have a full-time job, like, you have no time these days. So I would say just be very lenient at first when creating the habit of writing. 10 minutes a day or 5 minutes a day or 10 minutes a week, whatever it is you can squeeze in, set the timer, you know, don't look at your phone for that time, and just write free form, and that's it. And then maybe get a friend to hold you accountable, or if you can hold yourself accountable, that's great. But yeah, I think people, again, like with social media, they set lofty goals for themselves. Like, oh, I'm going to read whatever that, there's like a book on becoming the artist's way. I think that's it. It says like journal every day or something like that. Like, nobody has time to do that. Especially nowadays. So even if it's just 5-10 minutes a week, you know, build that habit, and hopefully you'll feel better afterwards. You know, I'm trying to do couch to 5K, and that's just a little bit at a time. You know, don't go in all at once. If you can afford more time to do it, do it. But just do it free form. Don't judge yourself. You know, you could shut your notebook afterwards and that's it. Just whatever it is, just try to do it just a little bit at a time and build the muscle.
Yeah, I'm reading. I actually just finished Atomic Habits. Mm-hmm. I can't think of the author's name, but he encourages his readers to start building habits in like these 2-minute time intervals. So like, if you want to start writing, if you want to make that a habit, then write every day for 2 minutes. Just yeah. start with 2 minutes, and yeah. eventually it will build.
Yeah. That's what I find with every habit. Like a year and a half ago, I started doing like 30 minutes a day of exercise. I rarely miss a day because it's like, I don't make it an hour. I just do like literally the minimum recommended daily exercise. And then if I can do more, that's wonderful. And I feel better. But just setting the bar low and then building up.
Yeah. And you mentioned journaling. You know, some writers, there are different feelings about it. Some hate it and some love it. As you said, it's like most people don't even have time to sit down and I think when people think of journaling, they think of this like deep time of reflection and they're just going to write this beautiful prose at the end of the day. But I feel like journaling should be more of like a free write, if anything. I mean, you're just trying to release whatever you have in your head at the time. How important is journaling to you as a writer?
I just started doing it again. I had a blog for a long time that I use as my journal. And I wanted to start again because I like remembering things. when I look back, I'm like, wow, I didn't remember that. And then you can see how far you've come. So that's why I use it. I don't particularly like doing it. It's kind of like hard exercise. Like I don't do it, but then afterwards I'm glad I did it. So I try to do it like once a week. I also don't like writing by hand anymore. I'm very much a typist at this point. So
Right.
So, I mean, if you like it, do it. It's just very neat to look back and see the progress, hopefully, you know, that you've made and just remembering things that you wouldn't otherwise.
That's kind of like, so I have a diary that I started when I was 10 years old. I still have this diary. Mm-hmm. And I love going back and just reading those entries.
Yeah.
Because it's in my 10-year-old writing and it's like it brings back memories. And my dad gave me a diary when I was 11. And I wrote in that diary up until maybe, I don't know, 5 years ago. So it was like at least one entry for each year. So I think it's just they're great record keepers. You know, they can turn into these great historical documents. I wish people wouldn't have this like, oh my God, journaling, that's so hard. I mean, it doesn't have to be as hard as you think it is, right?
Yeah.
So you do so many, like you're a content marketer, you write these great articles and essays, and you're a copywriter. Did I read that correctly? Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So, because copywriting goes hand in hand with marketing.
I mean,
it is like the content of marketing sometimes, right? Copywriting, like the stuff that you're actually writing to sell stuff to. I'm not making sense, but you know what I mean. So can you talk a little bit about, I know this is probably a huge question, like a little bit, but can you talk about the art of copywriting? Like what's an important skill that I as a writer should learn or develop if I want to become a good copywriter?
I think that it should be in line with content marketing, what I said about providing value to the audience. You know, and it just depends on your client. Like when you said that, I thought, you know, I write for law firms, so my value to the audience is, you know, providing them peace of mind, like after they get into a car accident or something, that they can contact a lawyer. It'll be completely free. They can rest assured their injuries will be taken care of. They can go to the doctor. They shouldn't fret. So with my copy, I try to be reassuring, calming, you know, I speak directly to them by using the word you and thinking of different scenarios they could be in. And it also helps because I also went through that I was in an Uber accident and I had to hire a lawyer. So that definitely helps. So yeah, just when you're copywriting, you know, do what your client needs and what their audience needs. And I don't really do advertising copywriting. That's an entirely different skill. I just do marketing. And that's mainly blogs, email, newsletters, social media posts, etc. So yeah, just nail down what your client needs, what their audience needs, and you'll be a great copywriter.
Right. And I think it's important too that you write like in a normal voice.
Yeah.
Some like lofty, trying to sound sophisticated or, you know, because that won't work. I mean, you're really trying to talk on the level with your reader, right?
Yeah. Like writing in a literally fifth to sixth grade, you know,
right.
That's
yeah.
what you do. I mean, save the lofty stuff for the novelists and the poets and, you know,
yeah,
not yeah. for content marketing or email newsletters or anything like that.
Yeah. So how, because I think a lot of writers want to, like the writers who are ready to publish, they want to send their work out to these publications as you did, newspapers and magazines. What is that process like? How do I start to send my work out to different publications?
Sure. So the first thing is only a few publications that I have relationships with for years, do I feel comfortable writing my full essay and then sending it to them. Because otherwise it's usually a waste of time because you should just pitch them on the idea first. So I would say come up with a really good idea. You have to scour through the archives of the publication and make sure it hasn't been covered before. If it has, what's the unique angle? So that's hard oftentimes because, you know, a lot of us have the same stories, and while we're all unique human beings, you know, publications don't want to publish the same thing over and over again. So what is your unique take on the world? And is this different from what other people are saying? That has to go into your pitch, you know, and also why are you the person to write about this? So I'm an Orthodox Jew. I write a lot about that topic. So, I mean, we're pretty rare species. These species, I don't know if that's what you call it, but we're like a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of society. Love so, and I'm a convert as well. So that's another fraction. You need, if you have those things, then flaunt them, you know, be open about them. If you are like a minority of a minority or whatever it is, like if you just had a unique experience that other people typically don't have, that's your pitch. So that's number one, finding your unique pitch, pitching that idea, not necessarily writing the full essay out. Mm-hmm. And then in terms of practicality, writing the email, you would put the pitch up front. You just go into it. You don't need to say, hi, my name is Steve or whatever it is. You just go right into it. You say, like, right now there are there's civil unrest on the streets and blah, 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 blah. And, you know, come up with your pitch or whatever it is. Then you say, you know, I'd love to write this because I've been published in these related magazines. So for Jewish things, I would put other Jewish magazines, and then I'd put three samples, and then I'd give them a link to my LinkedIn or my website for more information. And then I'd say, you know, sincerely, Kylie. So yeah, pitch samples as, and then the proof that you've done this before. If you don't have that proof, then, you know, you have to start somewhere. So you can always just send them your personal blog or just any good writing sample you have online. Or if you're like a college student, you say, you know, I'm majoring in journalism at this school, and people will give you a chance. Usually you have to work from the bottom up, so local papers and then national papers, but you should always try to go for the big fish if you can. And then to find emails, you know, you just type in the name of the publication and then masthead on Google. So let's say Women's Health Magazine, masthead, and hopefully it'll come up with the contact, and then you can just send them an email. I think
actually type in Google masthead, women's magazine masthead.
Yeah, like when, or okay. Oprah magazine masthead or New York Times masthead, whatever it is. That'll at least tell you the name of the person who you're trying to reach. And different tricks you can use to find their email. There's a service called Rocket Reach where you literally just copy and paste their LinkedIn address. You find their LinkedIn page, you copy and paste that into Rocket Reach, and it'll show all the emails for them. You can also guess by, you know, typically it's their first initial of their first name and then their last name. So let's say my name is Kylie Lobel, so it's K Lobel, and then at thepublication.com. You could try that. There's just so many different tricks out there. You can just Google, you know, how to find someone's email address, and I'm sure there's many that'll come up. Yeah, I wouldn't reach out on social media unless they explicitly say on Twitter, like an editor says, please DM me your pitches. But usually they'll say, please email me.
Right, right. And I think you brought up something that an author I was speaking with earlier a few days ago brought up, how important it is to research the people that you pitch. Because if you pitch to the wrong person, meaning that someone who doesn't, they're not even interested in the content that you're trying to present them with, like their publication is on baby toys and you want to write a story about your pet dog or whatever, that can save you a rejection.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Also, it's just annoying. Like, I get all these pitches all the time from companies. I'm like, you don't even know what I write, or, you know, you don't want to bother people. And it's also important to find the right person at that magazine. And also make sure they're still working there, because oftentimes magazines don't update their mastheads. And then, like, you'll look on their LinkedIn, double check, are they actually still working there? Or did they just get fired or whatever? And so my email might bounce. That's really important too. It takes 5 minutes.
That's a good tip. So how do you deal with rejection? Because I think that's that also really scares people. And sometimes if people get a certain number of rejections, they're just like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm not doing this anymore. How do you deal with rejection?
Yeah. So usually you're just ghosted these days, which is sad and frustrating. Mm-hmm. But I was submitting my memoir to a bunch of agents and got rejected, and that was really tough. But you know, that's a very difficult thing to do, to get a writing agent. So you just have to keep that in mind. If you're going after national magazines like Cosmo or Teen Vogue or anything like that, you're most likely going to get rejected, unfortunately. And it's, you know, it's usually nothing personal. It's nothing personal. It's not about you. It's just about, you have the right pitch at the right time. And is it clickbaity? Because they want clicks, you know? So I would say look for smaller outlets, you know, just keep going. Maybe rework your pitch, see what other articles they have. Maybe, you know, your pitch wasn't, I don't know. It all depends on the paper, but maybe you pitch something to like AARP magazine, but it's actually should be for millennials. So you should pitch to something else instead. And maybe, you know, if you've, for instance, I went after national magazines for years. I went after Oprah magazine. I sent them like 10 different pitches. They either ghosted me or they would reject me after hearing more about my pitch. And finally, I was just like, you know what? I'm probably not going to get into Oprah. So why should I keep wasting my time and chasing this down and just go for different publications? And oftentimes a lot of these magazines don't even pay that well. Oprah pays well, but a lot of them don't. I've worked for, you know, Washington Post and New York Magazine, and I've made more money on content marketing. So if, you know, money is what you're after, go after content marketing. It's nice to have a byline. It's nice to be able to brag about it to people. But you're going to make money in content marketing anyway. Just with rejection, just don't take it personally. Keep going and try to find other avenues.
Right. So with content marketing, so let's go back to content marketing, because this ties into kind of the personal essay, in that to write good content, you have to be a good storyteller, right? Yeah. So can you talk a little bit about the power of a story when you're writing to persuade?
Yeah. Within content marketing?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's definitely important to write those stories. As I said, like with law firm marketing, I'll introduce it with a story, let's say about the car accident, like you're driving along and then you get into a car accident, just really placing the person there right up front. That's really important. And it's very engaging instead of just going into advice or tips or whatever it is. I'd say always incorporate stories. That's number one. Being a good storyteller is number one for any type of writing that you do.
Right. And I think even if you're making like a video for your blog or, some type of audio clip, that should still tell a story. If it's the story of you or the story, whatever story you're presenting, maybe it's specific story that you've written on your blog and you're trying to write an ad for it, or the story of your blog, how it became the blog. Because I feel like really what readers want is not necessarily the product. Like, they don't necessarily want to read your blog, but they do want to experience something. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a story really gives you the experience.
Yeah. The most successful content creators, bloggers, personal essayists are the ones who are vulnerable. They're open, they're personable. People love to get a glimpse into people's lives. That's why the Kardashians are so famous and rich, because people love seeing them, like, oh, these people are so rich, but they actually have problems. And, that's number one these days. And especially when we're so fractured with Corona and we're not really seeing people, that's very important, just to put yourself out there in a way that feels comfortable. Don't spill like you would with your therapy unless you want to, but like I set boundaries for sure. Just be vulnerable, tell your story. People love that. They want to be able to relate to it. And it's all about, I'm not alone. This writer made me not feel alone. That's number one. That's all the best art is that.
Right. It's just, that's so scary for not just writers, but for anyone to be vulnerable, because it does kind of feel like you're just opening yourself up to criticism and judgment and ridicule. So how does one even, like, were you vulnerable when you first started out writing, or is that something you had to learn or develop, or how does that work?
No, you got to learn it. You got to develop it. I'd still like to be more open and vulnerable. It's just about getting to that, as I said, that place of calm and not being anxious to like really access it. And yeah, if you're a personal essayist, probably being in therapy is also very helpful. That'll help you, realize some things about yourself that you can write about. You always have to be open. And then, I've written essays and then, showed my husband. He's like, you really want to put that out there? Like, people are going to know this. And I'm like, yeah, maybe not. But it was still good to write it for myself.
Right. Because people really want like the emotional connection. Mm-hmm. Right. And yeah. I think maybe a lot of writers, they try to, when I studied rhetoric in college, it was always ethos, logos, pathos, the emotional, the logical, and then your credibility. And it's always like the emotional that is the most persuasive in most cases, because people just want to feel something. So what writers will tend to do is if they really want to try and capitalize on that, they'll just go overboard on the emotionalism. And maybe that is like sharing too much, or just gratuitously being too sad or whatever, or scaring people out of their mind gratuitously. But then you have those people that are just like too logical, or they kind of, there's no emotion. They're just trying to sell a product without realizing that there's another person that you're talking to. Do you know what I mean?
That's a very good point. Yeah, you don't want to be salesy or too logical about a certain topic, especially if it's an emotional one. People want to see other people being emotional, because normally we put on the face of like, oh, I'm a normal person, but none of us are normal. We're all crazy. And when somebody takes that mask off, we're like, oh, thank God, I'm not the only one.
I think Do you, you probably don't have this problem. I mean, I guess maybe if you're like a real big celebrity perhaps, but you, I mean, do you ever worry about people saying things about your writing on like platforms like Twitter or Facebook or like comments,
I think,
trolls?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was going to bring that up. So remember EXO Jane?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
So they were kind of, I'm not going to say the word, an S show. they had this series called It Happened to Me. So yeah, like I wrote for them a few times, and then I wrote about like converting to Judaism, and I got 400 comments about how I was like too religious, not religious enough. There was women commenting on how his dress, she's like, why is she wearing a dress, but she's also wearing a winter coat, and like just all these things. And I'm like, okay, this is supposed to be a platform for women by women. You're attacking me on how I look and my dress, and you're it's just ridiculous. And that, so that was like really, that went downhill, that site. And then a lot, it just kept getting more and more negative, like the essays, like it happened to me, and it was just the most horrible thing, you know, that people were writing about, because they had to be up the ante more and more. So yeah, I haven't gotten anything other than that. That was the biggest trolling, which was also very disappointing, because it was supposed to be a site where women supported women, and I just got the most hateful comments on that. So yeah, that's hard to deal with, and I don't know how people deal with it, bigger writers deal with it, or anyone, any public figure, constant hate coming towards them. You know, it's tough. You just have to shut it off and ignore the haters. And, you know, for that many haters, there's normally going to be a lot of people who love you too. So
right. Yeah,
it's
yeah.
good to focus on that, on the positive voices.
Right. Cause I think it's so funny how, it's not really funny, but I just kind of think it's interesting how we tend to always focus on the negative. Like we could have 20 people tell us how wonderful our piece was, but if one person says it sucked, like we'll just keep thinking about that one person. Do you know what I mean? It's just, yeah it's just interesting.
That's the problem with them, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
They come out of their way to say a piece sucks. Like I've been angry at articles and videos and things, and I've literally typed out comments and I'm like, nope, I'm going to delete it, because it doesn't need to be out there, the negativity. I don't want to hurt someone, you know. It's just keep it to yourself if you don't like it.
Right,
you know?
Yeah.
We're in an age where people are keyboard warriors and bashing people, and it's not good. And it's funny because like my husband posts a lot of inflammatory things on Facebook because he's a comedian and he's trying to rile people up, and people are so mean to him on his status, and then he calls them up on Facebook and they're so nice. They're like, oh, hey, how are you?
That's so, yeah, because it's easy to be mean when you're not seen, like when you're hiding behind a handle, you know, but you know, when you get the phone call and now it's like the real deal, you're like, oh, totally different. Yeah.
You're
that's
a real
funny.
Person. Like I think people just spend too long on their computers and don't see anyone lose their humanity. But like, I still see people, and I have a family, and you know, I'm like, I try to talk to people on the phone and everything throughout all of this. So if I see something on Facebook that's like really upsetting me, I would never troll someone or try to hurt them, because they're a human.
Right.
You have to see them as a human.
Right. It's like my mother always tell us when we were kids, you know, if someone says something mean to you, they're the ones with the problem, not you. They have the problem.
Yeah. And there's just too much going on these days. So people need to be nicer.
Yeah. So how do you do self-care for yourself with all this stress? Not that you're going through the trolling or anything, but just in general, as a writer, you get the comments, you have the deadlines, and you're juggling all this other stuff, and you're sending out these pitches. How do you keep your mind, body, soul, like, aligned?
Yeah, I mean, it's a constant fluctuation. Sometimes I'm really good at it, sometimes I'm not. Just having healthy baseline habits, like trying to get a good night's sleep, not stay up too late, exercising every day, as I said, 30 minutes a day, especially taking walks. That's the best. I went to the beach a lot this summer, like in LA, you know, yeah, Redondo is the best. Trying to travel when I can, spending time with my family, my animals, you know, even taking a shower. Like when I was a new mom, like a shower was the best thing. you don't really get a shower as a new mom. Right. So, getting massages every once in a while. But yeah, you really, if you're a small business owner, if you're a writer, which, you know, isn't the most lucrative career at first, then you need to take care of yourself because you can easily get bogged down by how much work you have and you can just get so stressed out. So, you need to have those healthy habits in place.
So as we kind of wrap up, do you have any, last words of advice or wisdom, particularly to the writer who has ideas but hasn't put them down on paper because they are scared to, or they feel like they don't have the time to, but they really want to?
I would say, you know, just start doing it. You don't have to show anybody. Do it in a way that you like, whether it's writing it down, putting a voice memo in your phone, making a video for yourself, whatever it is. Just do it. Do it slowly. Do it, you know, as you said, 2 minutes at a time or 10 minutes a week, whatever it is. Pick whatever works for you. And just do it. And I guarantee you, once you start, you won't be able to stop once you get into that flow. It's like the runner's high. You know, you don't want to stop running once you achieve it, even though it's very hard to achieve it. And it's like very annoying at first, but then you will get into it. And then at the end of it, you're like, this was amazing. So start small, do it in the format that you're actually going to do it, you know, put it on your to-do list if you have to, and hold yourself accountable to do it.
That is great advice, Kylie. Yeah. Thank you so much. Where can we find you?
Yeah, I'd say KylieOralobel.com. You can also find me on LinkedIn. And I have a new course out on how to make six figures freelance writing. It's on Teachable. So it's on my website. You can see it on my blog. You can go and sign up for it, sign up for my email newsletter, whatever. Just get in contact with me that way. But I love LinkedIn. It's the best.
Thank you so much. This was so much fun, Kylie.
Thank you. I had a blast, and I hope it was helpful to people.
It was, because you've done it all, the copywriting, the content marketing, the personal essay writing. I mean, now I'm just waiting for your bestseller.
I hope That'd be good.
Next to Great American Novel. All right. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You as well.
It was great talking to Kylie. Make sure you check out her course and her website and get to know her a little bit more, because she has a lot to offer as far as knowledge. Thanks so much for tuning in, and please join us next week because I will be talking to Melanie Hirshhorn. Oh my gosh, I can never say her name properly. Please forgive me, Melanie. Melanie Hirshhorn. Hirshhorn, that's her last name, Hirshhorn. She is a marketer. She founded VIP Digital Content, or Digital Marketing is the name of her company. She actually has her own podcast that is premiering next week, so I will have more information on that. But she is so much fun. She will be talking to us about how we can use email marketing to promote our blogs and some social media platforms. And she tells us how to use Pinterest, because I've always wanted to know, how do I use Pinterest? Like, what do I do with that? So please tune in next week for that one. And make sure you subscribe to my newsletter at zazo.com. That is my blog, where you can find more articles, more episodes of this podcast, and more information about myself. Okay, until next week, goodbye.